Hello and welcome to the Imago Nutrition Podcast. I'm Danielle Glesny, a dietitian and mom, and we are here. The Imago Nutrition Podcast is to answer your questions and give practical nutrition strategies to help you and your family flourish. So today I want to talk about some more help for picky eating. I know there are so many families out there that would say they have a picky eater in their home. Maybe the picky eater is you as the parent. Maybe it is your child. And no matter who it is, family meals are more challenging for sure. There are many causes of picky eating. And in most of my previous articles on our website and on our previous episode, podcast episodes, I have discussed basic picky eating because it is the foundation. It is where you do need to start to eliminate power struggles at the table, for more peace, to encourage your children to have variety without pressure. It's just definitely the foundation for more joy and less stress. And it's on principle or guideline from an international dietitian named Ellen Satter. So definitely go back and read those articles or listen to those podcasts if you haven't already done so, so you know a good starting point. So this is kind of more so a step two once you know about parent and child roles from Ellen Satter. If you do have a question that you would like to be featured on one of our podcasts, please go to Imago Nutrition, imagonutrition.com/podcast. And we'd be happy to answer that and feature it in one of our episodes. So thank you in advance for doing that. Today, we are going to talk about four things that can minimize the picky eating phase for children once the parent and child roles are implemented. And yes, I did say phase. Picky eating does not have to be a significant part of childhood. It does last longer than we would like. My son, for example, was a picky eater for 2 years, and I didn't have some of the tools that we're going to talk about today. So with that, let's just dive right in. The first two things that I'm going to mention are a little bit more basic, but they definitely have to be stated. So the first one is eat meals as a family. So eating meals together is so important for modeling. If your child doesn't watch you eat a variety of foods, he or she is less likely to. So if you, the parents, are the picky eater, I would still encourage you to eat together as a family. There are so many benefits of family meals that I don't want you to miss out on. However, I would like to pause here. So if you would like your child to eat a variety of foods for both physical and mental health, but you are not willing to eat a variety of foods, I'm just going to say it is going to be really challenging. I'm reading a book right now called The Worry-Free Parent, and it's all about how parents need to address their stress, worry, or anxiety before being able to help their children. At first, I was bummed because I wanted to have just tools to give to my children, to teach my children so that they can keep their stress low, their fears low, and anxiety low. So, however, you know, the point parents do need, you know, we want what's best for our kids, but sometimes that means we have to do the hard work for ourselves first. And it is hard work, but what is cool is it almost, you know, you get to, have more benefit throughout the whole family. So, you know, not only will your kids benefit, but you will benefit as well when you're doing that hard work. So for example, as I become a less anxious person, my kids will as well. So in the book, it kind of describes stress or anxiety or worry under one umbrella of stress. And so fear is the lowest intensity, then worry is middle, moderate, and anxiety is the highest. So everyone has some type of fear. And, you know, some worries, but our goal is just to keep, you know, it's on the lower, intensity level. So again, as I become a less, worry or fearful parent, my kids will as well. And I also will be able to learn firsthand what it takes, what the experience will be like. And so I'll be able to empathize with them and I'll be more familiar with the tools that they give me in this book to help them because I will use them first. So it's very similar to that. That's why I wanted to give you that as an example. So again, if you want your children to have a variety of foods, it is really important for you to model that. And, you know, reach out to me if you want more help with that. You know, a lot of times I hear it's because of texture. So sensory issues. So I'd be happy to help with that on how to slowly introduce yourself to different textures in a more comfortable way. Again, it kind of goes into, all this learning that I'm doing about stress and worry and anxiety, that the goal to eliminate stress and worry is not to avoid the situation, but to introduce it in a more tolerable way, and then practice with that. So it's kind of funny how this is related a lot to what I'm currently learning. But anyway, we don't have to have it all figured out. Obviously, I'm not going to be worry-free, like the book title says, before I help my kids. So that is a good thing. And you don't have to as well with the food be fully eating all foods before you help your children eat more variety. So when we are willing to do the work on change in ourselves, it will support the younger ones in our lives. It's more caught than taught sometimes. So they do need to watch you eat a variety of foods and just think of it as the family as a built-in accountability unit. Like, you guys are all learning to enjoy new foods together. You're all learning to prioritize your health together, even though, you know, maybe your child is two. they don't know what you're doing, but they're on board with you. So we can all make eating the same meal. We don't have to have separate meals. So the second one is to take a look at hunger levels. So are you hungry for dinner? Are your kids hungry for dinner? Is really important to be willing to try new foods. So if there's grazing throughout the day, the willingness to try something new will definitely decrease. So we eat for two reasons, to enjoy taste and out of hunger. And ideally we eat out of hunger first and then we enjoy the taste. But if we don't know how the food will taste, we are less likely to eat it if we are not hungry. So the hunger is something that needs to be there. So maybe it's not grazing. Maybe it's your kids are demanding a snack right before dinner. They act starving. And so it's hard to know what to do. So you think, I'll just give them a snack and hopefully they'll still be hungry for dinner. Well, no one wants hangry kids. So I understand that. And our role as a parent is to kind of anticipate when they will be hungry, when the next meal should be served based on the last time they ate. But without fail, I have failed multiple times, and I'm sure you will as well, that we can't get it all. We can't get it right all the time. It's, you know, it takes a little bit longer to make this dinner than we thought, or we were spending too much time outside, for example, and now we're rushing through to make it as fast as we can. And your kids will act like they're going to die if you don't feed them right now, but they won't. They will not. One thing that has helped with my kids is to give them an activity that they really, really enjoy to help them wait for dinner. So it's very highly distracting to them. So for my boys now, it would just be giving more time outside. That's a huge win for them. And they could probably wait until 8 o'clock at night for dinner if I let them play outside the whole time. So that wasn't always the case. So screens before dinner was helpful for a while because one, they were really sucked in and time flew by for them. And two, because they didn't rush through dinner to have screen time. So It was always really helpful for us to have screen time before dinner instead of after dinner, so that that could help with prepping dinner and getting it on the table quicker. And then also, again, they're not rushing through dinner. So maybe that would work for you guys as well. Another thing is, though, it's totally a good option to just pull out some veggies and put them on the counter while you're, you know, have 20 to 30 minutes before dinner. And you're like, well, that's the reason I'm listening to this episode, because my kids won't eat those veggies, and that's okay. So you still put those on the counter and just see what happens. Keep cooking. Don't, you know, give in to the crying and screaming. Stay strong. Again, you do need to go back to the previous episodes and articles about picky eating, because it talks about staying in your role. So the parent and child role are different. And so we need to know what those are. So again, go back to those previous episodes and articles, and this will also make sense as well. So yes, pulling out a snack of veggies, putting it on the counter, having it as a snack of fiber is really great, because they're really low in calories, so they should still be hungry for dinner, but also they're not filling up on foods that aren't going to help them stay full. So fiber helps you stay full, whereas if you put crackers on the counter, you know, they're going to help you feel full for such a short time. And then, you know, 10 minutes after you finish putting the dinner away, cleaning up, then they're asking for another snack. So yes, fiber would be the snack that I would choose for that before dinner snack, if it has to happen 30 minutes. Ideally, you just want an hour between when the meal, when the snack finishes, when the next meal is served, so you can have some hungry tummies and they're more willing to try something new. So the third one is called food chaining, or food bridges. And so this is basically changing a favorite food slightly, and you do it more and more and more. So it's like baby steps to trying new foods. Okay. So let's just say you want your child to eat grilled chicken. Okay. And they're only eating chicken nuggets. So they have a favorite chicken nugget, and that's all they eat. So the first step would be to buy a different brand of chicken nuggets, or taking that same brand of chicken nuggets and like cutting it into a different shape, like maybe a rectangle, you know, most chicken nuggets are very small, to get a cookie cutter would be kind of too hard, but cutting it into a different shape will help them more accept a different brand. So that would kind of be a bridge to a different brand if you feel like they don't currently eat any different brands. Sauces and dips can also be helpful bridges. So having different sauces available for them, to try. And again, this is going to take repetition and rotation. So you can't expect them to try the new brand of chicken nugget the first time you buy that. So you do need to have at least one accepted food on the plate. And then you do need to stick into your parent role and not make another meal. So no short order cooking. So when you have this new brand of chicken nuggets, you know, that is the only thing being served, with, you know, some more accepted foods, as well. So they will choose maybe only the accepted food for a couple times, maybe 5 times. They won't try that new brand of chicken nuggets when you put it out there. And then maybe by the 7th or 10th time, they will try the new brand of chicken nugget. And then you can do that for a little bit. And then you're going to move on to the next step, would be making your the chicken tenders, you know, instead of the chicken nuggets. So basically it's a chicken nugget, but in a tender, you know, style shape. And then the next step after that would be making your homemade chicken tenders. So now you're, you know, tossing them a little bit of egg and, breading, and then, baking them yourself. So that would be called those food chains or food bridges. So you're either changing slightly the texture or the taste slightly. So another option is, like, maybe you just want your child to eat fish sticks and they're eating chicken nuggets only. So you could even food chain to a fish stick. So again, buying the chicken tenders are more the shape of a fish stick right? And so you're going to gradually change slightly to get to the fish stick instead of the grilled chicken, for an example. So that is food chaining, is just one example of chicken. You know, if you are thinking about fruits and vegetables, especially fruits, just definitely take advantage of the, like, the frozen and the freeze dried and the dried textures to make your food chains, so that you can have different texture changes and different taste changes as well. And what's really cool is when you're not just aiming for that end result, that one new food, you're actually getting tons of different foods along the way. And you're also building your child's confidence into trying something new. Building your child's confidence is not through encouragement. Encouragement at the table is perceived as pressure. So again, that's in the previous episodes and articles. So if your child knows what you want them to eat, they will eat very little of that or not touch it at all. So food chaining can be done with any food, and it's a great way to encourage your kids without any pressure, because you're just providing the meal. It's, you know, that food that they love is just changing slightly, very, very slightly, slowly over time. So again, give that a try. I think you'll find, one, it's just giving a little bit more variety as you go. So you're going to be able to see, some changes, which is encouraging for parents when this is definitely a hard stage to be in. All right. So the last one is food experiences, food exploring, food play. You can call it whatever you want. In all those words, hopefully you hear the word fun. Food experiences, food exploring, food play. It really just depends on the age of your child, what type of things you do. So you're just getting them in the kitchen with you and getting their hands dirty, getting them close to food and making it a fun environment. So for example, those really young ones, it could be pretending the carrot is a car, driving up their arm, or it could be snapping the ends off asparagus for children to actually, you're building, you know, those hand strength. And could be if their child's even older, cutting fruits and veggies with you. Maybe a younger child can be stirring or helping you measure or pouring things. Have them smell your foods that you're cooking, whether it be spices and herbs or even just the smell of, I don't know, whatever it is you're cooking, and any fruit or vegetable that you are cutting. So if you think about food acceptance, you know, it starts with just like being okay with it in the room with you, and then being able to smell it or touch it or, you know, things like that. And then it might be like touching their lips. So it's really a very small step ladder, for food acceptance. And sometimes that might be helpful for parents too, to see those progression, that progression towards eating. Sometimes it's even, you put it in the mouth and you spit it out. That's even closer to eating than it's not, you know, unfortunately, well, fortunately or unfortunately, it's like, you feel like it's poor manners, right? So we don't want to spit our food out at the table. So if you're more comfortable doing these types of things when you don't have company, I understand. But just being okay with your kids using their hands to touch foods. There's a lot of, interesting research about, you know, when babies are mouthing like toys, that's how they're learning to be okay with food touching their mouth. And, it's really important for mouthing to help with preventing, you know, picky eating. So, if you have a really young one that's not even eating right now and you're listening, so that's a great way to get started, to just make sure they have those baby toys that they're gnawing on, and, you know, clean hands that they're gnawing on. So that's what one benefit of that. So just remembering that, the food experiences, food exploring, and the food play is age appropriate and it's fun. So the goal is definitely not to eat the food. So that is not the goal of those, you know, times. It could be 15 minutes. It could be an hour that you're doing it with your child. Try to set like a schedule to just keep yourself accountable as far as like, okay, we're going to do, you know, this once a week or three times a week, for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour or however much time you have. It can even happen at the table. So like, for example, something on their plate, just asking them, what does it smell like? Does it have a big smell or a little smell? Like a grape, for example, would have a little smell, but broccoli would have a big smell. So that can be part of the food exploring. So they can, you know, talk about all the different senses at the table and is that food cold or warm or hot? Those kinds of questions, are not, perceived as pressure. As long as you make that, you know, that apparent to them, you're not forcing them to eat after they smell it. So yes, just trying to, incorporate all the senses and keeping it fun is a great way to encourage them. And our last way that we are going to talk about today, as far as helping more help with picky eating. So I hope you have found this helpful. If you can, subscribe, review, share with a friend. Follow us at any social media platforms at Imago Nutrition, I-M-A-G-O Nutrition. And as always, we want to thank Happy Pill for our theme song, Thinking About Food.